This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 28th of February 2014. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 28th of February, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Graham Cranmer.
Hello.
And Andrew Smith.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: Jemima is on her way, we're fed up with HGVs in our village, and city freezes council tax for the fifth year. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which is Jemima's on her way. A subheading, we can't thank people enough. A Winchester family have said a big thank you to everyone who helped them raise more than £100,000 to enable their daughter to undergo life-changing surgery in the US. Joe and Andrew Siverit have spent the last 6 months organising fundraising events to send six-year-old Jemima to America. They have hosted charity balls, triathlons, a row around the Isle of Wight, and just last weekend, a children's tea party in their local village hall. Mrs. Siverit said, "We have been overwhelmed by the support from family and friends and businesses who have helped us. We want to give a special mention to Hendy Ford, who so generously donated a car for auction, and to Barker Mill, to all those who rode around the Isle of Wight with Andrew, to everyone who helped organise the ball, and to our community for putting together the village hall party. There are just so many people who have made this possible. We also want to thank Chronicle readers and all the help we have received with the publicity of our campaign. The Hiltingbury Infant School pupil was born with quadriplegia, a form of cerebral palsy. Jemima will now undergo a selective dorsal rhizotomy at the St. Louis Children's Hospital in Missouri on March the 18th. She's not eligible for the procedure in the UK because of strict NHS guidelines. Once the family returns, Jemima will face months of hydro and physiotherapy. The family have seen no end of generosity towards their cause. When their story was first reported, the Barker Mill Foundation stepped forward and donated £10,000, and more recently, Hampshire car retailers Hendy Ford donated a Fiesta Z-Tech to be auctioned at a charity ball. The children's tea party last Sunday was hosted by their family and friends, adding to the pot that has made the trip a reality. Mrs. Siverit added, "This type of surgery varies so much from child to child, and Jemima is a very severe case. There will be a significant change after the surgery and all the therapy, and it will reduce the need for her to have further surgery later in life. This isn't a miracle cure. Jemima will probably still need a frame or a walking stick, but this gives her a better chance of being independent, of having 24-hour care, and possibly even living on her own one day." And there's several pictures, one of all the tea party, all the children lined up, and little Jemima in the middle in her wheelchair, beaming out. And a picture of the two parents with Jemima, and a lovely picture of a whole lot of people dressed up as ducks. The rabbit character and an otter, huge otter. It's about 10 foot high as far as I can see. And again, the parents with little Jemima in her wheelchair.
"We're fed up with HGVs in our village." I can say that with some feeling. "A group of Alsford residents have urged city chiefs to stop heavy goods vehicles from using country roads. Calling themselves Trucked Off, the group presented a petition of more than 2,000 signatures to the County Council before its annual budget-setting meeting last Thursday. They argue 40-ton trucks are putting lives at danger because the roads are too narrow. Speaking for the group, Jan Field said, "This problem has been going on for years, and ever-increasing volumes and sheer weight of traffic night and day now has to be brought under proper, strict control." The group told the council Alsford Salads was a major contribution to the traffic, with lorries bringing in produce from overseas to its base in Old Alsford. Lorries have also become stuck at the bridge when trying to pass other large vehicles coming the other way. Miss Field, also chairman of the Alsford Society, added, "Imagine the congestion when an articulated lorry 40 feet long tries and sometimes fails to negotiate tight turns in this Georgian town, or drives on the wrong side of the road because they cannot otherwise negotiate twists and turns in the surrounding lanes. This is a very real risk to life and limb. Shoppers, walkers, cyclists, horse riders and small vehicles in the town and on the roads are menaced daily." She added, "Houses have been hit many times, and if not actually hit, quite literally shake when some of these juggernauts thunder by. Trucked off requested the council undertake an assessment of use of the road." Council Chairman Ken Thornber said the council would take the deputation under consideration and respond in due course. Speaking after the meeting, Alsford County Councillor Jackie Porter added, "The deputation and petition is not against business, but asking those businesses to use appropriate-sized vehicles to conduct their business." A spokesman for Alsford Salad said, "We're not commenting on this. We don't believe this is a matter for us to be commenting on. It is one for the local authorities." And there is a photograph of Councillor Jackie Porter with 2, 3, 4, 5 other members of the trucked-off protest group.
City freezes council tax for fifth year. Winchester civic chiefs have agreed to freeze council tax for a fifth year in a row. An average Band D property will pay £126.27, the same as in 2010-2011, the council meeting unanimously decided last Thursday. With the county council also freezing council tax, households will have relatively small increases from the police and fire authorities. Senior Tory councillor Stephen Godfrey said, "Despite reduced government funding, the council was presenting a balanced budget with no tax increase or cuts to services. The council has transformed the way it works in recent years, making less money go further and raising income by boosting the local economy," he said. "Some £113 million will be invested in capital schemes over the next 5 years, including the Silver Hill Renaissance, £6 million on enterprise centres and land purchases." Councillor Godfrey said the council was also working towards making all civic contractors pay the living wage. "The aim is to make Winchester one of the first living wage cities, where local people can expect to earn enough to afford to live here." The Liberal Democrats tabled an amendment to reduce the cost of lease cars and freeze pest control fees, as well as making £120,000 available over the next 2 years to fight fuel poverty, where poorer households are paying a disproportionate amount to heat their homes. Lib Dem leader Kelsey Lerney said she supported ideas such as the council tax freeze, but added, "We need to focus more to help residents struggling in these tough times." Councillor Therese Evans said the latest figures from 2011 revealed there are 3,636 households in fuel poverty in the Winchester district. Labour leader Chris Pine said, "We are beginning to recognise the pressure on those least able to support themselves, the elderly and those on low incomes. Although the average income is £26,000, the median is £11,000 to £12,000, which means half of all families are on that figure or below."
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, then Christian comment, letters, historical items, chronicle comment and first person, and then we'll do the announcements and what's on. So we start with the announcements of deaths this week, the 28th of February. Brown, Roger William Brown, on the 16th of February, aged 72. Cod, Joan Rosalie Cod, peacefully in hospital on the 1st of January, aged 96. Douglas, Dorothy Douglas of Byton, peacefully on the 9th of February, aged 84. Elms, Peter Henry Elms, died on the 18th of February, aged 85. Horn, Stephen Lawford Horn, died died on the 15th of February after a long illness. Jennings. Marion Jennings died at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 87. Kent. Jean Mary Kent died on the 20th of February, aged 87. Peterson. Bill Peterson died on the 15th of February. And St. John Channel, the Reverend Canon Michael St. John Channel, died suddenly and unexpectedly at home in St. Marybourne. And there is a short obituary. Tributes have been paid to a senior Winchester Cathedral clergyman who has died suddenly at the age of 60. The Reverend Canon Michael St. John Channel had become vicar of Hurstbourne Priors, Long Parish and St. Marybourne near Andover, after retiring last year as precentor and sacrist at the cathedral. He'd held the post since 2006. The Very Reverend James Atwell, Dean of Winchester, said, "We've all been coming to terms with the sudden loss of Canon Michael, and thinking particularly of his family and those close to him. The funeral will take place at the cathedral on Friday, March the 14th, at 10:30 a.m, in the form of a Requiem Eucharist. A service of thanksgiving will be held at a date to be announced. The funeral service will be followed by a private burial ceremony at St. Marybourne." And now we're going to move on to a Christian comment read by Andrew.
This Christian comment is written by Mary Gray, and the title is "A New Cardinal Who Listens to the People." As Hampshire struggles to recover from the severe floods, the Catholic community received the news, not unexpected, that on Saturday, February the 22nd, the Archbishop of Westminster, Vincent Nicholls, would fly to Rome to become Britain's newest cardinal and receive a red hat. But does joining the ranks of the princes of the church mean adopting a grander lifestyle and mingling with the rich and famous? Not according to recent evidence. For, even before this news was announced, Archbishop Vincent Nicholls had hit the headlines by writing to the Prime Minister criticising the benefit cuts as a disgrace. He said that the basic safety net that was there to guarantee people would not be left in hunger or in destitution had been torn apart, often leaving people with nothing for days if they failed to fill a form in correctly. Even though an annoyed Mr. Cameron retorted that the reforms were a moral mission and gave people hope, the cardinal-elect was followed by 27 Anglican prelates, including the Archbishop of Canterbury and 16 other clergy from the Methodists, United Reform and Quakers, all accusing the coalition of creating hardship and hunger. This is the most significant political move by the Church of England since Faith in the City in the 1980s, attacking Margaret Thatcher's cuts. And there is abundant evidence to show this will not be an isolated action by the Cardinal, who is quick to point out that Pope Francis has chosen new cardinals with experience of severe poverty in cities globally, for example Rio de Janeiro, Santiago, and now London. Vincent Nicholls has long supported Caritas, the social action arm of the church, speaking out about poverty and the need to express solidarity with the poor. His increasing concern for what life is like for ordinary people now shines out. For those who are desperate and having to turn to food banks, as well as for migrants who often experience victimisation. The Christian response, he thinks, is not just to help the poor, but to understand the causes of poverty. It is part of my responsibility to not only encourage people to help through food banks, but to listen. These are difficult issues, and when people are caught in destitution, there are multiple reasons. This witness of listening is something learned from Pope Francis. The most significant thing is the personal witness that he gives. At the heart of it is his understanding that we are all missionary disciples. There's hope here of a more challenging style of leadership for our contemporary church.
Thank you, Andrew. Now we move on to letters. Nikki, you've got the first one.
From an M. Simmons, Fair Oak. The water has to go somewhere. Sir, read Topfield and recent discussions to build further or not. I was born in and lived my earlier years in Kingsworthy. I often revisit and have seen many changes. Recently, while walking around Hookpit, I visited Topfield via a temporary footpath. Passing behind properties of a much earlier development, I could see that these owners had been using this area as a dumping ground. Is this another reason why they are against the development? No more dumping ground. Just where do these said newcomers think the land for their properties came from? Farmland and small holdings, and in Old Kingsworthy, the land of the larger houses, i.e. the paddock, woodlands, Hinton Fields, Court Road, and more to come, I believe. The water through Springvale Road is no surprise at all, as the name implies. My mother, as a girl, would ride her bike along this road and said that, due to the springs, it was often flooded. I heard of one development along this road where an owner complained to the builder that there was a leak under the floor. On investigation, it was found to be running spring water. Further along, not far from Tesco, the village pond was fed by this water. So where do they think this water now escapes to? This is M. Simmons, Roseland Close, Fair Oak.
Dr. Jim Thompson of Grange Road, Alsford, wants a straight answer to a straight question. Sir, Keith's story repeats the claim that only the Conservatives will guarantee a referendum. But it is now inevitable, as legislation has already been passed by the Coalition requiring a simple in-out referendum within the next treaty, when the next treaty change has to be approved. The when may not be known yet, but it is inevitable. Treaty changes will be proposed within a year or two, as the EU agrees measures to improve the stability of the Eurozone. Given this inevitability, the issue is, do you support being in the EU, or are you in favour of the UK retreating into isolation? The Lib Dems are the only political party who have unequivocally stated that they will campaign in any future referendum for Britain to defend its vital interests by remaining in the EU. It's time for MP Steve Brine to stop hiding behind the timing of a referendum and tell us where he stands on the most important question of the day. When asked during a recent street survey, he refused to give an answer, saying only, "What do you think? I'm a Conservative MP." That is the problem. We don't know. Half the Conservatives do, and half of them don't. And he won't tell us which half he is. It is time for him to give a straight answer to a straight question. If there were a referendum tomorrow, would he vote for or against Britain staying in the EU? Dr. Jim Thompson, Grange Road, Alsford.
And Quentin Brooke from Clifton Road in Winchester asks, who conceived this imbecilic idea? So, Andover Road gets flooded and a temporary road is constructed because, as Councillor Sean Woodward, HCC Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment said, on an average day, 6,000 vehicles travel northbound on the Andover Road. Its closure has obviously led to increased traffic congestion. Is that the same Andover Road that will be closed forever in a few years, to be diverted through the new Barton Farm housing estate, creating a beautiful mix of pedestrians, frustrated drivers, diesel fumes and juggernauts? Does anyone know the name of the individual, stroke imbecile, who conceived the idea? And there's a picture there of a car driving along Andover Road North in Winchester, surrounded by concrete bollards on the temporary road.
And from Andy and Jackie Dyble, Winchester. Thanks to all who saved the city. Sir, we would like to express our gratitude for the superb efforts made by so many during the recent flooding in Winchester. Our own experiences started with the flooding of Park Avenue, where we have lived for many years. We recall the near miss of the flooding at the turn of the century, when there were also good efforts to work around the problems. This time, the issue may well have been a great deal worse. The relentless rise of the River Itchen may have put our own property at risk, while also being so for properties in neighbouring roads, as well as the necessary traffic flow in the one-way system. At worst, it was possible to envisage the river flows and rising water combining to overwhelm the lower part of the city. What happened was that the Environment Agency, supported by the Fire Brigade, the Royal Navy, the Army, and Winchester City Council, worked together to build barriers in Park Avenue. At first, this seemed a strategy not without risk and uncertainty, but with that commitment of resource and what was at stake, it was a solution that had to be made to work. The work started during Wednesday evening, with the barrier being placed within the deepening waters in Park Avenue, whilst water was also being removed by a powerful pump. The sheer effort and determination to get this done was outstanding, and with cooperation that we can only describe as being superb, a superb example of British teamwork, we applaud these tremendous efforts at the time and since, around the clock, to preserve and save our city. We have all seen how dreadful this could have been from the pain experienced elsewhere around the country. The use of barriers was simple but inspired, and an elegant solution to achieve a number of essential objectives. Congratulations to all those who were involved. We are sure we are not the only ones who are delighted. To all of you, you should be very proud, and for ourselves, it is wonderful to now feel these efforts, that thanks to these efforts, our homes are dry. Andy and Jackie Dybel, Park Avenue, Winchester.
And another letter from Oldsford. We're doing well today. It's from Robin Atkins, FCA of Lindley Gardens, Oldsford. Sir, it appears you cannot express a contrary view to New Oldsford Town Council without action being taken against you. Firstly, the bar manager at the recreation centre, Heather Graham, raised the fact that NATC had not registered for machine gaming duty by the required date of January the 31st, 2013, nor had received monies from the 50-50 machine deal since May 2011. She also banned an employee. Result, Heather was sacked. She has now brought an action for unfair dismissal to be heard by the Southampton Employment Tribunal on July the 21st. Losses claimed are £100,000. Secondly, Natalie Carpenter expressed her concern re the sacking and complained to the external auditors that the NATC accounts to March 31st, 2013 were wrong. Result, she was driven out and accused of bullying the clerk. Thirdly, I have been criticised, critical of councillors and clerk, re the above matters. Result, I have been labelled a vexatious complainer. The auditors upheld complaints that the NATC accounts were incorrect and there was a lack of basic procedure, re machines, cash, contract of employments, etc. The tribunal will rule on the claim. Who will pay for all this? The residents of Oldsford, whereas all of these matters and cost were totally avoidable, so each councillor should pay for the losses suffered by NATC. Robin Atkins, FCA, Lindley Gardens, Oldsford.
And Chris Sparks from Oldsford Road in Winchester writes, do look out for the lengthsman. Sir, read John Pittman's letter of February 20th. You only have to turn the corner into Otterbourne to see that they have a parish lengthsman. I look after 13 parishes all year round, including Otterbourne. I keep the gullies clean, ditches and channels, footpaths, road signs, anything the parishes need doing that I am able to do. I have done work for Headbourne Worthy and the Itchen Valley, who now have their own lengthsman, looking after 11 parishes. Stockbridge, Shedfield have their own. Burlston's is full-time due to the parish's size. The parishes I work for have said that they can see a difference since I started 2 years ago. So yes, the lengthsman is alive and working. I have cleared many a roadside ditch to stop flooding in the Test Valley and my own parishes. I keep them strimmed so they do not block up. Some gullies I am unable to do due to busy roads, so this is then passed to highways to sort out. When you are about, look for a man with a yellow reflective jacket, and it may be the parish lengthsman at work.
Thank you, Andrew. And now we're stepping back in time, Nikki, 100 years, I think.
Yes, February 1914. The committee begged to submit the 17th annual report of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital for the year ending 31st December 1913. The number of patients treated during the year was male inpatients 472, female 542, children 344, total inpatients 1,358. The total number of patients treated was 3,150. The number of operations, 1,088, and the daily average number of beds occupied, 103. Every care is taken that only patients qualified to be treated under the rules of the charity are received into the hospital. But even so, it has been impossible during the past year to limit the numbers received. And a second letter. Sir, may I appeal to those of your readers who have possessed horses, which they have either given away or sold, to read some of the accounts recently sent to the press from eyewitnesses of the continental old horse traffic, and then to picture to themselves what their own horses may be experiencing at this moment. I am sure that if they will do so, they will write to their Member of Parliament and ask him to be present on the 3rd of April next to support the bill of Captain the Hon. Arthur Murray to prohibit the export of live horses of a less value than £10.
So 50 years ago, February the 28th, 1964, there are two items. The first one is headed, Camp Should Revert to Farmland. Sir, the Hampshire Notebook of February the 22nd describes the depressing case of Stockbridge Camp. This is one of many similar cases of wartime requisitioning of land for duration only. If in wartime it was possible to erect a camp such as Stockbridge in 20 to 30 working days, with labour mainly over military age, it cannot be an impossible task with modern plans to break up the roads and paths, burn the hutting and dispose of all fixtures and fittings, water and electric services, and put in the plough and restore the land potential. And the second item is, in the House of Lords on Wednesday, Lord Morrison of Lambeth called attention to the problem of transport in Great Britain and recalled that the Buchanan report stated that the number of motor vehicles of all kinds would double in 10 years and treble in 20 years. Whereas in 1963, there were 10,500,000 vehicles, for 1970, the estimated number was 18 million. For 1980, 27 million. And for the year 2010, it was estimated the figure would be 40 million. It ends up speaking during the debate, which, and I think there's no more to it. There's no more in the...
Must be a line missing. Don't worry, Graham.
There's a line or even a... It goes on to the next shop, right, expected in the paper. Never mind. You've got the gist. Transport problems like we have now.
So, from 25 years ago, March the 3rd, 1989, two articles. The first, entitled Council Blamed for Shop Closures. As shops in Winchester continue to close, one small and independent trader has criticised the City Council for not doing enough to stop the exodus. Bridget Turner, owner of The Chocolate Box in Little Minster Street, is angry that the local authority has allowed the high street to become dominated by a handful of multiples while doing nothing to help the little people. She says, "Since we moved here, the shopping centre has gone steadily downhill. There's nothing here except expensive clothes, shoe and card shops." And the second article, housing officers in Winchester have been told they must act now to alleviate housing problems in rural areas, rather than discussing them endlessly in committees. A lengthy report identified high property prices, limited availability of housing for first-time buyers, and limited availability of alternative sources of housing as the key problems in rural areas of the county.
And there's another article from the files, and there's a large picture of a group of protesters with anti-war and ban the bomb flags and banners walking down the high street from the direction of the Westgate, which is in the background. And it's Winchester's anti-nuclear protesters on the march. And this comes from the Chronicle of the April the 24th, 1981. And it reported on the Winchester Against Cruise Missiles group march. Around 200 protesters marched through Winchester on Saturday, demonstrating against the proposed sighting of cruise missiles in Britain. The march, organised by Winchester Against Cruise Missiles, coincided with similar events which took place across Britain and Western Europe over the Easter weekend. Carrying banners and shouting anti-nuclear slogans, the marchers, representing all age groups, set off from Orams Arbour and moved through the town before returning to their starting point for a picnic. And now we're going to move on to editorial comment, Nikki.
A big step for a brave little girl. A family's determination to give their daughter a chance to walk tall has passed the first hurdle this week. Joe and Andrew Siverett from Otterbourne have raised the staggering $90,000 needed to send six-year-old Jemima to the US for life-changing surgery. They have hosted charity balls, triathlons and a row around the Isle of Wight, to name but a few. But it's heartening to see how so many people have been touched by little Jemima's story and have been willing to help. They include motor dealers Hendy Ford, which handed over a new car for auction, and the Barker Mill Foundation charity, which gave so generously to the cause, after finding out about the appeal through the pages of the Hampshire Chronicle. The Hiltingbury Infant School pupil was born with quadriplegia, a form of cerebral palsy. Now she will jet off next month for the specialist surgery and then undergo months of hydro and physiotherapy. While the family say it's not a miracle cure, it will give Jemima a better chance of being independent of needing 24-hour care. We wish this brave little girl and her remarkable family all the best.
George Hayter writes the column today, calling it Go North for Action, Sport and Dramatic Spectacle. It is sometimes mocked as a dull town, but my wife and I recently discovered that Basingstoke has excitement more usually associated with the slopes of St. Moritz or the beaches of tropical Hawaii. We explored Winchester's apparently bland northerly neighbour on foot one Saturday morning and soon came across people achieving flight just by lying horizontal and putting their arms out. No wings, wires or tangible support of any kind. I'll explain in a minute. Basingstoke's tall buildings include one bearing the word Skiplex. That sounded like a dry ski slope, but we couldn't understand how a slope could fit into a building so narrow, unless the slope was either very short or extremely steep. Venturing inside, we climbed some stairs and found the explanation. On the first floor were two pistes, like none we had seen before. Both were only a few yards long. Both were being used by just two customers, who, though busy skiing, were not zooming down the gradient. In fact, they weren't moving at all. What was moving was the slope itself. It was an endless white belt, a giant version of the conveyors on running machines in fitness gyms. Skiplex boasts that the system offers intense practice with no time wasted on taking a lift back to the top because you never reach the bottom. More remarkably, across the room, people were flying. They were encased in a vertical glass tube that had air rammed in at basement level and sucked out at the top floor. Across this 14-foot diameter see-through wind tunnel was a net upon which stood an instructor. Customers took it in turns to spend a minute in the windy tube, and once they adopted a horizontal pose, found themselves held aloft by the fast-moving air. If they looked likely about to crash sideways into the wind tunnel wall or downwards into the net, they were seized by the instructor and repositioned. Then the instructor would take hold and lie alongside them. Instantly, they would together accelerate upwards at an astounding rate, and within a second or two would be at the roof of the building before shooting down to the first floor again, coming to an instant stop just short of the net. A digital readout showed the air travelling at up to 140 miles an hour. Instructor and customers all wore a flying suit and crash helmet. Prices appear to start at £30, and the firm R-Kix also offers this indoor skydiving at Milton Keynes and Manchester. I've never dared to parachute, but this could tempt me. If I did plan to jump out of an aeroplane, this would certainly seem a sensible way to get used to free falling beforehand. The building also offered brush boarding, or surfing without water. But no one was on that, so that machine, well, no one was on that machine while we were there. Anyway, we'd been amazed by enough of Basingstoke's cutting edge accident action for one day.
Now, before we move on, thanks, Graham, before we move on to general news, we've got the announcements. We start with What's On. And there's a concert on Saturday, the 8th of March, at St Cross Hospital Church, at 7:30 p.m. It's Fauré's Requiem and Vivaldi's Gloria, and it's by the Twyford Singers, conducted by Derek Beck. Tickets are £10. And if you require more information, you can buy them on the door or you can telephone 01962 712722. That's 01962 712722. Two theatre listings. The Theatre Royal Winchester has Twelfth Night from the 3rd to the 8th of March at 7:30, with a matinee on Tuesday and Saturday. The Theatre Royal box office is 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. And at the Mayflower Southampton, Warhorse is on until the 15th of March at 7:30, with matinees Thursday and Saturday. The Mayflower box office, 02380 711 811. That's 02380 711 811. We should also, I think it was Roy read it out last week, Open Sight, the Eastleigh-based charity for visually impaired people, has arranged a holiday specifically for such people, and to the Bradbury Hotel in Worthing for a week commencing the 16th of April. If you want more details on that, you can contact Terry at Open Sight, and the telephone number is 02380 646 377. That's 02380 646 377. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 28th of February at 6:52 a.m. and begins at 5:44 p.m. On Wednesday the 5th of March it ends at 6:42 a.m. and begins at 5:53 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And now we continue with items of general news. Andrew.
There's one here called Basingstoke Comes to Bushfield, and there's a very nice picture of a well-landscaped roundabout on a beautiful sunny day above the article. There was a time when the countryside south of Winchester started at Five Bridges Road. So has anyone else noticed the insidious suburbanisation of the Bushfield area? There is the park and ride, of course, but also the less obvious attempts to replicate the environs of Basingstoke. And there's a picture above as I described. Why has the Bushfield roundabout been prettified when it is on the edge of open farmland and when money is scarce in these cash-strapped times? Can the reason have anything to do with the city, council, county councils and university's long-term desire to develop bits of nearby Bushfield Camp for a science park? It is a subtle change, but making the roundabout look like it is in Chilworth or Chinham is a small step on the way.
Wagamama set for city location. Restaurant chain Wagamama will be coming to Winchester, developers have confirmed. It was expected to open on Jury Street in October, but developers said planning complications have led to a delay. A spokesman for Versant Developers said, "The planning application has taken much longer than we anticipated, and we are going ahead, and are very excited to be part of this project. This type of eatery is very much in demand, particularly in Winchester, where quality food is already available, and we're looking forward to welcoming new custom." As previously reported in the Chronicle, Versant had applied for planning permission for a change of use of Century House, formerly a Winchester family church, into a restaurant across the lower ground floors, along with four apartments.
Music proves a real education. Pupils at Barton Stacey CFE Primary were treated to a week of fun music education, which saw visitors come in to perform. The week was described by Mrs. McMullen, who organised it, as a music extravaganza. She said, "The children have had the opportunity to experience a range of musical styles, and who knows what budding musicians, composers or conductors we may have in our midst." They enjoyed a visit from a member of Rocksteady Music, who showed the different instruments used in a rock band. And the following day, there was a whole school trip to Central Hall, Southampton, to watch a children's classical concert performed by Southend Pro Musica. It included well-known pieces such as The Thieving Magpie and Parade of the Tin Soldiers, as well as specially composed songs for the occasion. Children were shown how to use music to tell a story, and some classes wrote their own songs and created instruments. Five musicians who form part of a military band at ATR Winchester visited on the Thursday and played a half-hour concert using unique instruments, including a kettle, watering can and a scooter. And I was about to describe the picture accompanying this article of three children, and I realised they're holding certificates in the name of some quite different school. I will search for the article that should have gone with the photographs and read it to you next time round.
Two articles from Belgarum. First one, ex-mayor mucks in and cleans up. Sweet wrappers, drink cans and crumpled leaves. King's Walk in Winchester has been looking downtrodden lately. Since the City Council took official ownership of the area as part of the redevelopment of Silver Hill, it seems to have lain forgotten in the city centre. Former Mayor, Councillor Sue Nelms, noticed the issue, which she has since reported to council officials, who have not yet been able to add it to their cleaning rota. So she decided to sweep the street herself last Wednesday. "I don't blame the officers, because they have to work to systems," she said. "But what I do worry about is that this is a number of people's livelihoods and is really filthy. So I thought that I would do my bit to help. This is part of the area that will be redeveloped as part of Silver Hill, but it has to exist profitably until then." Annie Smith, who works in the antiques market, agreed. She said, "Can you imagine in the summer with visitors coming through and seeing this?" A council spokesman said, "The city is taking over supervision of the King's Walk development. We have been made aware of the cleanliness of this area, and it is being attended to." And there is a cropped picture of Sue Nelms, who was Mayor of Winchester from 2006 to 2007, with yellow rubber gloves and what looks like a broom handle, though it could be a placard. And the second article, Political Panto Sees Lib Dems Centre Stage. The annual budget-setting meeting in Winchester always has an element of high drama. Last week, there was the usual last-minute amendment political ambush, delete as appropriate, when the Lib Dems, boosted by the defection of Conservatives, Councillors Derek Green and Jamie Scott, sniffed a chance and tabled a proposal. At one stage, Lib Dem leader Kelsey Lerney left the room as Councillor leader Keith Wood was speaking. He said, "Where's Kelsey Lerney? Where has she gone? It's pantomime stuff." "Oh, no, it isn't," quipped Councillor Martin Todd.
A lot of flooding stories, I'm afraid, but here's another one. Not quite near to where I am. Tempers flare at flood event. A duck race to rally support for flood defences near Alsford was soured when a road closure nearly caused violence on Sunday. Villagers in Bramdean were hosting their first yellow duck race to raise awareness of the problems when a motorcyclist tried to force his way through. He threatened one villager who stood in front of his bike, blocking the way. The unnamed resident said, "The road is clearly closed and there are a lot of children here trying to have fun. I asked him to drive around the closure and he tried to swing at me." Only last week, A Range Rover driver got his wallet out to pay a boy to get him to come through. It's unbelievable. Jill Berryman of Wood Lane said, "This is what we had to face every day. Drivers getting violent towards residents. Just the other day, a freight lorry came through at 35 miles an hour and created an 8-foot bow wave. It's creating so many problems for the houses, it's very upsetting." Duck race organiser Pippa Deakin-Stevenson said threats of violence were just one of many problems the residents had faced because of the flooded, closed roads. "The idea behind today was to bring the village together to share their feelings about it," she said. "While we are sympathetic with the council for doing what they have, this village, like so many others, has been so badly affected. We would like the council to either redirect the A272 or put in the correct means with the money from the government. We don't want it to be diverted into more desk jobs. We want it to be used properly. It's a vital arterial road, and there should be cars and lorries going down it, not yellow ducks. We have suffered severely and asking how we are going to stop this happening again. I've even offered my garden to the council to dig up and put in storm drains, because I'd rather do that than have this happen again." And there is a photograph of a motorbicyclist with a pillion passenger, and obviously a resident remonstrating, pointing, telling him to go back. And headed, the resident confronts motorbiker who tried to drive through the village ignoring closure sign.
Now, the three children whose photographs appeared above the item about Bart and Stacey are actually from Hairstock School. And two boys and a girl, and the two boys are holding certificates that clearly say, now I read very closely, Hairstock School, place-based design. And the girl in the middle is holding a number of other documents and notebooks and a map, I can see, and so on. They're from Hairstock Primary School, and they're members of Koala Class, who triumph in Play Space Race. They've won the Barton Farm Play Space Design Competition with their pirate-themed play area. Some 21 teams from the school battled it, gathering at a special assembly where Carla Holmes crowned the aptly named Team Best Designers from the Koala Class the winners. Their design for the play area on the proposed 2,000-home Barton Farm scheme included a pirate ship, climbing frame, monkey bars, slides and picnic bench areas. The teams were set the task of deciding on a theme and name, as well as play equipment, safety features and landscaping for the site. Rob Westwood, Carla Holmes' project director for Barton Farm, said they were spoilt for choice with the quality of ideas put forward. "The great thing about this project is that it is not just a theoretical exercise. Team Best Designers will see their designs come to life and be enjoyed by the community for many years to come. Barton Farm is a significant development for Winchester, and we are keen to continue to involve the community as our plans progress." Jackie Sankey, head teacher, thanked the company for their £200 donation to the library, £25 book voucher prize to the winners, and goodie bags for runners-up. She said, "We were delighted to be asked to take part in the competition, and the children have certainly relished the opportunity to design their own play area."
And on the beat with police band. There's a large photo here of seven uniformed police officers, four lady officers and three male officers. And three ladies at the front are holding up CDs with the title Duty Calls. And from the instruments among them, I can see a French horn, a trombone, a couple of flutes and a saxophone. Now you can buy a police CD without having to listen to Sting. The band of the Hampshire Constabulary has released a new album entitled Duty Calls to mark the force's 175th anniversary. It features a diverse selection of music, ranging from Les Miserables to Glenn Miller. Discs are for sale priced £10, of which £1 will be given to Cops UK, Care of Police Survivors UK, a registered charity which supports the families of officers who have died in the line of duty. Other profits will go towards the running costs of the band. The band's director of music, Major Pete Curtis, MBERM, said, "Their enthusiasm and passion for music is reflected throughout this new CD. The quality of the playing is excellent, with some outstanding solo contributions, and they really have a brilliant product that they should be very pleased with." In November, the band will perform in the last post ceremony at the Menin Gate at Ypres in Belgium, and will also take part in the Armistice Day commemorations at Thiepval in France.
Kids get cooking thanks to Debbie. Children in Winchester are picking up skills for life after a woman set up a cooking classes business. Cookie Kids, the brainchild of hairstock entrepreneur Debbie Plunton, started at the beginning of the year and is focused on providing children aged 6 to 11 with essential cooking skills and information on how to eat healthily. The after-school and holiday workshops are run in Ms. Plunton's kitchen on Wood Green Road, and she recently held one of her first sessions during half-term. She said, "It's lovely to see it all come together, and especially when you see the children go off and enjoy it. They love getting their hands sticky and messy, but still getting the finished product at the end." Miss Plunton received approximately £650 from the Winchester City Council to help buy the equipment needed. She added, "It was great to use all my new equipment. The grant from the council really helped get all of the last bits together, and the children got to use the colourful scales and utensils." Classes cost £12.50 per week for 6 weeks, or £15 on the day, with a variety of themed workshops planned over the coming months. For more information, go to cookie-kids.co.uk. That's all lowercase, cookie-kids.co.uk. And there's a lovely photograph of Mrs. Plunton and two children beaming away wearing their purpley blue aprons with a bright red rolling pin and a bright green chopping board and a bright blue bowl full of peppers, red peppers and tomatoes. So all very colourful and happy.
There's another school story, and this time it's combined with a flooding story. History repeats at St. Bede. A Winchester school is having to relocate its pupils for the second time in only 14 years due to flood damage. For over 2 weeks, St. Bede Searby Primary has been unable to use toilets due to groundwater flooding from the River Itchen, and on February the 10th and 11th, it closed completely. Some 300 pupils from reception to year four have been relocated in a bid to keep their education consistent, with year two at King's School as of February the 25th and years three and four at the Westgate School in full flood. Reception and year one are relying on home learning clubs until Monday, March the 3rd, when there will be part-time education at Lanterns Children's Centre in Week for reception and at Winnell Primary School and Winchester Discovery Centre for year one. On March the 10th, all reception to Year 4 pupils will move to the temporary site at the Henry Beaufort School in Hairstock. Pupils from Years 5 and 6 will remain at St. Bede. Head Louise Fitzpatrick said she couldn't thank other schools, authorities and local people enough. It has been a fantastic community effort. We've seen the best of people's generosity of spirit helping us in our hour of need. Local authorities have been amazingly helpful and are providing a temporary school for us at Henry Beaufort, and we're very grateful to the head, Sue Hurl, and the governors for allowing us on their site. Year 5 and 6 pupils will be staying on site, but it's not a situation for little ones. The flooding was extensive but didn't come into the building. That's a very different story to the winter floods of 2000-2001, which closed the school for 18 months. It has since been rebuilt and raised 2 feet. Meanwhile, there's better news for the School of Art in Park Avenue. The West Side buildings closed for 2 weeks, reopened on Tuesday. And there is a photograph of people in wellies and waders building flood defences at St. Bede in Winchester. There, I think a mixture of of staff and parents, as far as I can see, but obviously having some effect.
And moving on, Sheriff Awards to recognise community stalwarts. Hampshire's most impressive volunteers will be honoured in one of its most impressive settings this weekend. The High Sheriff of Hampshire's Community Awards, presented to those who make an outstanding contribution to communities across Hampshire, will take place in Winchester's Great Hall this Saturday, March 1st. Individuals to be honoured are Angie Palmer Clark at Winchester Area Community Action, Isabel Hughes at Winchester Young Carers Project, Julie Roberts at the Theatre Royal, and three students at the University of Winchester, Charlotte Gould-Smith, Darcy Jackson and Molly Vasey, who are recognised for their work on a play put on with inmates at the prison. Spurgeon's Invisible Walls Service, which works with Winchester Prison and supports families affected by imprisonment, is one of two charities recognised. The other is Winchester Church's Night Shelter, which helps the city's homeless and vulnerable. The awards will be formally given to winners from across Hampshire at a special ceremony in the Great Hall from 6 p.m. And there's a picture from previous awards showing the High Sheriff of Hampshire, Rupert Younger, congratulating Helly Longhorn of Spurgeon's Invisible Walls Project with other members, watched by the Mayor of Winchester, Ernie Jeffs.
Going batty over ping pong. Bishop's Waltham pensioners are proving they're still game after taking up table tennis at a new over-55s club. Laurie Rickwood, a village agent for Age Concern Hampshire, set the ball rolling, having been inspired after seeing a documentary that followed a group of Chinese octogenarians as they prepared for the World Table Tennis Championships in 2012. He said, "We've been promoting ping pong for older people in the community, and I was approached by a number of people who were interested in playing. There are various health benefits for older people." Mr. Rickwood hopes the club will reduce social isolation and loneliness, and the initiative is part of the Better Balance for Life Falls Prevention Project. Ping pong enthusiasts say the game can improve balance, which builds confidence and in turn reduces falls. Alzheimer's groups have also lauded the game for improving sleep patterns, increasing cerebral blood flow, and promoting better coordination and upper body strength. The club has been meeting every Wednesday from 2 p.m. till 5 p.m, but is now on the lookout for a permanent home, having secured the backing of Bishop's Waltham Parish Council, which agreed to provide access to the town's scout hut until the end of March. For more information, email bishopswalthamva@ageconcernhampshire.org.uk. Again, all lowercase, bishopswalthamva@ageconcernhampshire.org.uk. And there's a lovely picture of table tennis enthusiasts, John Tunnicliffe, John Hunt, John Morehouse and Peter Jenkins, all lined up, hitting the ball, beaming back over the net.
Winchester Green campaigners are backing potentially controversial moves to introduce 20-mile-an-hour speed limits in the city centre. Winchester Action on Climate Change says it will help cut emissions of greenhouse gases, make streets safer, and encourage more people to walk, cycle, or catch the bus. It also wants to see the limit extended into the suburbs, and not just in the city centre, largely within the Roman city walls. Chris Holloway, WINAC director, said it would strengthen a sense of community and nudge people away from using their cars without reflection. In addition, it would assist the economy by making it easier for shoppers to browse and making the town even more attractive to tourists, and it would help people become healthier by walking more. WINAC says the slower speeds relieve congestion and delays. Evidence shows that it makes little difference to journey times and makes for smoother journeys with reduced energy costs. Where physical measures are introduced along with the change, the limit is more likely to be self-enforced, although cost may hinder this being implemented throughout the town at the same time. Physical measures can be introduced gradually, starting with high-priority areas and in new developments. Barton Farm is crucial in this respect, added Ms. Holloway.
And some news in brief. Two killed in car crash. Two people were killed in a car crash near Winchester on Monday night. The elderly couple, a 70-year-old man and a 69-year-old woman, were travelling southbound on the A34 near Littleton when their car careered off the road and ended up on its roof. One of them was thrown from the vehicle, a red Ford Fusion, while the other had to be cut free from the wreckage. Neither has yet been named, but are believed to be from Fareham. Emergency services rushed to Three Maids Hill just after 6:30 p.m., but the woman was pronounced dead at the scene. The man, who sustained serious injuries, was taken to Southampton General Hospital, but died a short time later. It is not believed that any other vehicle was involved. A spokesman for the coroner's office said post-mortems were due to take place on Wednesday.
Sexual predator groomed children. A self-confessed sexual predator set up fake identities on a social networking website to groom children for sex, a court heard. Robert Anderson would fantasize about having sex with underage girls and targeted them by pretending to be a teenage boy on a website which is easily accessible to youngsters. As part of a sophisticated campaign of grooming, the 33-year-old from Chandler's Ford would shower underage girls as young as 13 with compliments before asking them to strip off in front of a web camera. He even picked some of them up in his car for sexual liaisons in the New Forest, buying them McDonald's takeaways and plying them with alcohol to win their favour. When caught by police after a family member of one of the victims found out what had been going on, Anderson confessed to being a sexual predator, Southampton Crown Court heard. Prosecutor Gavin Sumpner said, he said by acting out his desires, by using social networking websites to contact underage girls, and specifically said it was easier to meet them and have sex with them. He described his sexual fantasies as mental and out of control. The court heard how Anderson is known to have groomed 8 girls aged between 13 and 15. One of his victims was targeted on the website tagged.com, a social networking site linked to Facebook. Having contacted the teenager using his false profile, Anderson then began messaging her using the WhatsApp smartphone application, promising her a McDonald's in exchange for a hug. When they met at the Millbrook branch of the takeaway, he drove her to a remote spot in the New Forest and kissed her. On another occasion, he drove the girl and her friend into the New Forest, where she was convinced to perform a sex act on him. Another girl, aged just 13, was persuaded to talk to him over Skype in order to take her clothes off on a webcam. Anderson also talked to her about her sexy school uniform and having a drive together. Anderson of Baddesley Road admitted attempting and engaging children in sexual activity and offences of grooming. Sentencing him to 5 years behind bars, Judge Peter Rawls said, "Clearly this was a long and serious campaign of sexual offences." Anderson was also given an extended supervision period of 4 years because he was considered a danger and handed a sexual prevention order.
Another glance at the dark side of Hampshire. Domestic abuse is on the up in Hampshire, latest crime figures suggest. Data released by the Office for National Statistics show a total of 25,140 domestic abuse incidents were recorded by Hampshire Police during 2012-13. A rise of 1,672 from the 2007-08. But the force says the increase is down to better crime detection rates and its commitment to helping victims come forward. It recorded 10 murder offences throughout 2012-13, the seventh lowest of police forces in the UK. Hampshire Police also recorded 72 firearm offences during the same period, equating to 4 per 100,000 people in the area. The force had the 11th lowest number of knife and sharp instrument offences in the UK, with 365 recorded incidents. Hampshire Constabulary says the statistics show it is performing strongly and is in the top half of forces across the UK. Superintendent Ben Snuggs said domestic abuse is a key priority for Hampshire Constabulary. A wide variety of crimes are classified as domestic abuse in line with the Home Office definition. There are many reasons why domestic abuse crimes also remain underreported, and Hampshire Constabulary has done a lot of work this year to encourage victims, perpetrators, family members and work colleagues to speak out about domestic abuse, report it and seek help.
And from the courts we have Nobody Questioned My Timesheets, as accused ex-bursar tells of 12-hour days at school. The jury was due to retire on Wednesday in the case of the former bursar accused of fraud at a Winchester school. Linda Whittaker, 65, denies two charges of fraud against Osborne Special School, with the alleged fraud totalling £70,000. Giving evidence, she broke down, saying a member of the public in the public gallery was accusing her of lying. She sobbed as she told her counsel, "I'm finding it upsetting that a person behind you is accusing me of being a liar." The trial at Winchester Crown Court was suspended for 20 minutes, and when it resumed, Judge Jane Miller, QC, addressed the crowded gallery. "It was the person sitting behind the police officer. Please don't speak to anyone else or make facial expressions." The trial has heard that Whittaker submitted numerous timesheets between 2008 and 2012 for herself and a friend, Patricia Hickman. But Whittaker of Loveden Lane, Kingsworthy, said the overtime was all genuine and needed to cope with the demands and pressures of the job. She told the jury that as well as being bursar, she was also clerk to the Board of Governors. Officially, she was contracted to work 37 hours a week, but said she had never seen a document that stated the postholder would always work more than 37. Whittaker said she undertook other roles, such as cleaning walls before an inspection, escorting the children, driving the bus, cleaning up, and looking after upset pupils. She always worked more than 37 hours and took work home and went into school at weekends. At one point, she approached the then head, Rod Wakeham. "From the day we moved into Osborne, the staffing was cut. My workload was the same, but with reduced support. It meant I had to work even longer. I told him I couldn't cope with the long hours. I was working almost a 12-hour day." Patricia Hickman came in to help her. Asked by her counsel, David Reed, whether there was any reason to think she was not entitled to make the claims, she said, "Not at all." Both Mr. Wakeham and, from 2008, his successor, Sonia O'Donnell, signed the timesheets and never questioned the hours they were claiming overtime for, said Whittaker. The trial heard that timesheets between April 2008 and March 2010 had disappeared from the school archive. Whittaker said she had nothing to do with their disappearance. She said she had no financial training. "I learnt it on the job," she told the court. The case continues.
School campaigns for girls' rights. A Winchester school will be holding a special screening of a film campaigning for girls' rights. Joining St Swithin's pupils for Girl Rising will be BBC South Today's Laura Trant and former diplomat Sir Edward Clay. It tells the tale of girls across the globe, and its campaign works with partner organisations, including Plan UK, which St Swithin's have fundraised for through the Girls' Schools Association. Last year, pupils raised £23,000 for a sister school in Uganda by walking, swimming and even parachuting, enabling 23 girls to receive an education. Genevieve Charland, 18, a pupil, said, "Around the world, 65 million girls are not in education. We want to do our part to help." The screening will be held at the school's Harvey Hall on Tuesday, March the 25th at 7:30. Entry is free, but anyone who is interested should contact St Swithin's School in advance for tickets on 01962 835 717. 01962 835 717.
There's a picture of a familiar building with a slightly uncomfortable caption saying, "Uncertain Future, the Royal Hampshire County Hospital." And the heading is, "Make Health Survey Meaningful Exercise." It's in quotes. A public consultation on major changes to Winchester and Basingstoke hospitals must be genuine and not a paper exercise, the deputy leader of Hampshire County Council has warned. Councillor Keith Manns made his comment at a meeting of the Health and Wellbeing Board after NHS chiefs outlined controversial plans to centralise critical care services. The Trust is considering either building a new 300-bed emergency centre on a greenfield site north of Winchester or expanding Basingstoke Hospital into a HOT supercentre. Under both options, the Royal Hampshire County Hospital could become a cold hospital for effective procedures and community services, with a midwife-led centre for natural births only and a walk-in centre for less serious emergencies. More high-risk births involving caesareans and epidurals would take place at the new critical treatment centre. Councillor Manns, chairman of the Health and Wellbeing Board, said the public consultation must be genuine and not simply, as has happened in one or two cases before, though not here, a paper exercise. People want the best treatment they can get. They are quite prepared to travel some distance for acute care, but equally want more minor interventions to be as local as possible. The proposals to centralise services comes 2 years after Winchester and Basingstoke hospitals merged to create a critical mass of 500,000 people to keep services sustainable in future. As reported at the time, Mary Edwards, Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, said the RHCH would keep consultant-led maternity care and A&E. But the clinical argument is that without major changes, the two general hospitals will no longer be financially sustainable or safe. The new critical treatment centre would have consultants on site 7 days a week. The new hospital would only treat the sickest 20% of patients, including major trauma victims, heart attacks and strokes. Heather Housechild, Chief Officer of West Hampshire Clinical Commissioning Group, said the Trust was keen to realise the benefits of merging and reorganising services. But any reorganisation needed to pass 4 tests. Have the background of GP commissioners, a clear evidence base, robust patient and public engagement, and support patient choice. Health chiefs plan to employ a private market research company to conduct the formal public consultation, due to start next month and end in July. Some 1,142 people responded to a preliminary consultation last October and November, and health chiefs plan to publish the findings. Mrs. Housechild said the views of local people would be taken seriously and could result in changes. Meanwhile, the Trust will carry out a detailed analysis of the 2 options, including financial. Health chiefs have not yet publicly identified a site for the new hospital, but would like it to be within a triangle of land between the M3, A303 and A34 for easy access. The NHS already owns a site, former Trust offices, in this area at Bullingdon Cross.
City treats in store for children this Easter. Children with a sweet tooth will be in for a treat when the Easter Bunny pays a special visit to Winchester this year. Organised by the Winchester Business Improvement District, BID, or BID, and the City Council, the free Winchester Bunny Hop is inviting children to take part in a city-wide Easter egg hunt. Egg-shaped clue cards displaying a letter will be hidden away in shops up and down the High Street. Once all the cards have been collected, it's off to the Discovery Centre to work out the simple mystery phrase, which could see one lucky winner earn themselves a 400-gram giant milk chocolate egg. Lottie Eagles, Marketing and Communications Officer of Winchester Bid, said, "The Winchester Bunny Hop is a great way for families to enjoy some time together over the Easter period and to visit some of the fantastic confectioners and child-friendly shops across the city. We are so pleased to be working with the City Council on this event, which is now in its fifth year, and we are very grateful to the businesses that support the event and make it possible. The free event takes place from Saturday, April the 5th, to Thursday, April the 17th, and on Saturday, April the 19th. A free quiz sheet, which includes an easy-to-use map with a numbered walking trail in the city centre, can be picked up from the Winchester Tourist Information Centre or downloaded from visitwinchester.co.uk.
You may remember in the letters section a letter from Andy and Jackie Dybel headed "Thanks to all those who saved our city." Well, this article has a photograph of them. A very nice-looking middle-aged couple, she holding up the plastic flood barrier and he has a supportive arm round her. And here's the story. We must relearn lost skills. Water levels continue to subside across Hampshire, but an expert warns the dangers are not over. Rod Murchie, water resources specialist at the Environment Agency, said, "The land is fully saturated above Winchester and Rumsey with huge amount of groundwater. We are getting runoff. If it rains, the rivers rise 12 hours later. It will depend on the intensity of the rain." Mr. Murchie said people were again learning skills lost in the 20th century. "We are relearning water management practices millers, farmers and town councillors would have known 100 years ago, or we'd lost those skills." He said another problem in Winchester was the culverting of the three brook streets. "They do not have as much capacity as if they were open streams," said Mr. Murchie. Environment Agency manager Lawrence Talks, who lives in Hyde and who led the defence of St. Bede's School, has written a report to pass on lessons learned. Mr. Murchie said the key lesson is not being afraid to take action and take risks, such as blocking off a carrier. If you make a mistake, you learn from it. In Park Avenue, one of the two emergency barriers was last week removed, although the other remains. Villagers across the district are enjoying a well-earned rest. In Twyford, flood coordinator Angela Forder-Stent said the barrier watch had been stood down. "We hope the crisis is over, although we expect the Bourne to flow for some time at a reduced rate. However, the levels might rise again, and should that happen, we have all the equipment on standby and can spring into action." Meanwhile, a Winchester couple have been nominated as flood heroes by the fire services for their help after the River Itchen burst. Jackie, 59, and Andy Dybel, 57, were nominated by Winchester Fire Station manager Alex Rhodes after offering their house in Park Avenue as an emergency base. Mrs. Dybel said, "We were talking to one fireman who was on his phone all the time, and we just let them set up base here. Better they be indoors with all that rain. All we did was let them use our house and make them tea and toast. They're the real heroes. We just did what anyone would do." Mr. Rhodes said, "They never questioned it or thought it was inconvenient and were really happy to help. They are just a nice, happy and grateful couple. I've also nominated the staff at the Winchester School of Art. They spent a lot of feeding us at their canteen. For about 4 days, they arranged teas and coffees and breakfast, even though there were about 25 of us."
It's a bit more upbeat. James puts spotlight on local produce. He is the Hampshire food hero, on a mission to highlight some of the county's finest producers, James Martin. And there is a picture of him, significantly perhaps, opening a bottle. He's shining the spotlight on Hampshire Fair in a new television programme debuting next week. The Saturday Kitchen star will be seen cooking meals with ingredients he has gathered locally, including fish from Franklin's Fish Farms in Alresford. Anthony Gay, who runs the farm with son Nicholas and grandson Timmy, said, "The crew visited our farm and spent a day filming our Hampshire trout. A month or so later, we were invited to James Martin's house to watch him cook some of our trout. We were lucky enough to taste the finished dish, and I have to say it was the best trout I have ever tasted. It really delicious. Other local producers include meat producer Laverstock Park Farm, Lyburn Cheese, and New Milton-based Naked Jam. Jennifer Williams, Naked Jam owner, said, "It was a privilege to be asked to be part of the new programme, which champions small, unique producers." James Martin is not only a fantastic chef, but he's also really interested in food produced by lots of Hampshire Fair farmers. Members. "It made me feel really proud of our Hampshire food heritage." James Martin, Home Comforts, title of the programme, continues Mondays on BBC One at 3:45 p.m.
And this is still on the theme of local food, as farmers take control from field to plate, and beef and lamb producers to open their own restaurant. "It's a burger with a difference, and it's packed with benefits to people's health." A Test Valley company that produces burgers made of meat from farm animals grazed on chemical-free pastures is set to dish them up at a new style restaurant in Southampton. Horton-based Chalk Valley Limited is behind a fast casual dining burger and hot dog restaurant in the city's London Road, set to open shortly. Bosses say Chalk Valley Burgers restaurant, which will create around a dozen jobs, is a cross between the fast food and casual dining formats. Chalk Valley's founder, Will Buckley, whose wife, Sarah Jane Fairy, has invested what he described as a considerable amount of cash into the restaurant project, said meat used to make the burgers was being resourced in Hampshire and Wiltshire. "This includes beef from a commercial herd of 60 North Devon cattle and lamb from a flock of 150 sheep on Chalk Valley's own 1,100-acre Bossington estate near Stockbridge, buffalo meat from Dagan and Jesse James Manor Farm at Broughton, and pork from Ginger Piggery at Boyton near Warminster in Wiltshire." Mr. Buckley said grass-fed meat had caught the eye of nutritionists and scientists. He said this was down to the health-protecting nutrients in the produce. "It's healthier for consumers and the animals," said Mr. Buckley, who added that all Chalk Valley products were sourced from pasture-based farming systems and no grain or concentrates were fed to the animals reared for burger or hot dog production. "The animals are also fed silage and hay as supplements. Our sustainable, pasture-based methods go way beyond organic," he said. "By dedicating land to pasture systems like these, we're building soil carbon and long-term fertility. This means that we don't need chemical fertilizers or pesticides." He concluded, "We're also encouraging wildlife. Birds, wildflowers, insects, small mammals and reptiles all flourish on our farms. So our customers can relax and enjoy the tastiest, healthiest burgers around, knowing that they're helping to make our world a little better. Besides meat-filled burgers and hot dogs, the restaurants will also feature vegetarian options, and it will be selling organic ice cream, organic milkshakes, organic beer and wine." And there's a photo at the top of the article showing Sarah Jane Fairy and William Buckley, and it looks like they're stroking and caressing one of the buffalo with big smiles on their faces.
Guildhall transformed for fairytale fundraiser. A magical evening saw the Guildhall transformed into a fairytale forest and raised almost £8,000 for charity. The Enchanted Evening Charity Ball, presented by the Mad Hatters, was the brainchild of Catherine Turnis and Claire Wellman. The pair have both had family members diagnosed with cancer. Claire's father died of chronic myeloid leukemia, and Catherine's brother survived tongue cancer. Proceeds from the event will go to leukemia and cancer research. Catherine said, "We are absolutely overwhelmed with the amount we raised and staggered by the generosity of those who kindly supported us both during planning and on the evening. We never imagined that we'd reach nearly £8,000. I'm very much looking forward to meeting the University of Southampton cancer research team and presenting them with the funds." Around 180 people turned out and were charmed by the fairy tale transformation of the Guildhall, with lights, garlands of roses, exotic bird cages, walkways of trees and glowing lanterns. guests in the Bapsey Hall bid for auction prizes, which included a weekend's yacht charter on the Solent, which raised £1,700, and a private helicopter ride and stay at Chewton Glen, go for £900. Capital Breakfast DJs, Gillies and Emily, saw the guests through until the early hours with their DJ set. And there's a photograph of the room with everyone dressed up for the black tie and lovely evening dresses and the fairy lights and everything described. And also of the joint organisers, Claire Wellman, who is blonde and beaming in a beautiful blue dress, and Catherine Turnus, red hair, slim in a very exotic black dress.
Race spectacular goes on. The Winchester 10K was hailed as a great spectacle on Sunday, after worries the event was going to be cancelled after weeks of rain battered the course. And to prove it, there's a picture of, quite a number of the runners in action, in which about 500 athletes enjoyed reasonable conditions considering recent weather. The surrounds of River Park Leisure Centre, where the event started, managed to survive the deluge, meaning the race could go up ahead after several inspections and fears that the route wouldn't hold out. Fiona Hogarth from organisers Concept Sport said, "It was brilliant, a fantastic race. Everybody was running with smiles on their faces. A great spectacle. We were really pleased with it all." In improved weather, Southampton AC runner Richard Waldron missed out on second place by the slimmest of margins. Waldron finished in 34 minutes and 1 second, just pipped by 0.01 of a second by unattached runner James Phillips. The race was won by James Baker from Chichester Runners. He was more than a minute in front of Phillips and Waldron and recorded an impressive 32 minutes 55 seconds. Winchester and District cleaned up in the men's and women's team events. Simon Stevens, Marius Quint and Andrew King helped their team to victory, while Natalie Kane, Susie Perry and Sarah Shedden clinched victory for the ladies. First across the finish line was Fenella Langridge of Team Promotion Dynamics with a 40-minute 33-second run. Although most of the route remained unscathed by the weather, the section heading out to Kingsworthy on Springfield Road was closed off because of flooding. And there's a close-up of some of the runners who were at the start, and they indeed are smiling. I don't know what they're like when they finish. And there's also another picture, someone with the hands clasped behind his head, not quite a Mo sign, but he was the first Winchester runner, number 117, Simon Stevens.
And villages come alive with the sound of music. Over 100 singers joined in Compton and Shawford Festival Choir's Sound of Music workshop at Colden Common Community Centre. Led by conductor John Sutton, they rehearsed and then performed a selection from The Sound of Music to relatives and friends. On Sunday, February 23rd, it emerged that Maria von Trapp, the last of the Trapp family singers who inspired the hit musical, had died at her home in Vermont, aged 99. John inspired everyone with his amusing and light-hearted approach while ensuring the music was correctly and well performed. This departure from the more usual classical choral works was fully enjoyed by all, from long-standing members of choirs to people who have never sung with a choir before but love the musical. The call to come in themed dress was wholeheartedly taken up and resulted in, quote, brown paper packages tied up with string, abbesses, captains and Marias. And there's a picture of all the performers above in those themed outfits. All proceeds will be used by the choir to fund the hire of soloists and instrumentalists for their concert on December the 13th, 2014, at Chandler's Ford Methodist Church, when they will perform Haydn's Nelson Mass and a selection of carols by John Rutter. New choir members are always welcome, especially tenor, bass and alto voices. Further information from Secretary Cara Hawkes on 02380 812 314. That's Cara Hawkes on 02380 812 314.
Extra time as awards prove a hit with firms. Winchester businesses have been given another week to nominate themselves or others for this year's Winchester Business Excellence Awards. The competition has proved such a hit with local business organisations, the deadline for submission has now been extended to March the 14th. Katie Crow of the Hampshire Chamber of Commerce said, "It is great to see so many local businesses taking an interest in the competition. Requesting an entry form is easy, and you can even use the form to nominate another business if you feel it's deserving of an award. If your business has yet to enter, now is the time to act." The announcement comes at the same time new sponsor, Hotel du Vin, launches its criteria for the Best Winchester Food Experience Award. The winner will be a restaurant, hotel, pub, cafe or food producer which uses and promotes mainly regional, artisan or Hampshire produce and offers consistently high quality food and drink in an enjoyable atmosphere. The judging will consider the ambiance and service of the eating and drinking experience, one that brings together through food and drink, has a genuine commitment to standards and shares a passionate belief in the use of local food, being of the highest quality, authentic and responsible, and supports the local economy and develops strong food communities.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week, so thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. And thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Graham Cranmer.
Goodbye.
And Andrew Smith.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.